We now move to the final session on disclosure initiative. And we will start a summary by four presenters, three from ISB, one from New Zealand, Kimberly, who help us a lot. And Hugh said they will give you a few minutes to have a, you know, face-to-face feedback. Please, Hugh.
Good morning and hello again. I'm just going to say a few brief words and then I'll pass to the presenters. Boris Yeltsin was once asked, Boris, if you could describe the state of the Russian economy in one word, what would you say? And he says, good. And he was asked if you could describe it in two words, what you would say? And he says, not good. Now, I was just telling Christy, this one always gets a laugh. It's 100% track record with that one. With the disclosure initiative, the really good thing, there's lots of good things about it, actually, starting with the team, I would say, and our colleagues from New Zealand. The good thing is it's on the agenda. It's very high up the agenda. And actually, Andreas told us it was number one on the agenda, which is even more important to us. The other good thing is it's making lots of good progress, as I was mentioning yesterday. And if you track it against Hans's 10-point plan that came out after his breaking the boilerplate speech, there's a lot of progress on those different points. We still obviously have a lot of work to do. The not-so-good bit, or let's say the more challenging piece, is the fact that we do get recommendations to do all kinds of things as part of this initiative. We touched on climate disclosures yesterday, and I was at a conference on climate disclosures last week. And there are a number of constituents who want the ISB to take on a project on climate disclosures, which is not obviously our traditional financial reporting. At the same time, there was a very prominent banker there who'd been a finance director for quite a period of time, and he said, look, you know, that the topic of climate had not once come up in any conversation, any general investor conversation, come up in special interest type conversations, but never in a general investor conversation. So one of our challenges is how to hit the sweet spot in all of this stuff. And I think we do need to be a little bit cautious about how much we take on. We could take on all sorts of things. But ultimately, you know, in trying to maintain the relevance of IFRS, we have to, as I say, just hit the sweet spot. So with that, I'm going to pass firstly to Kimberly Crook from the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board. So Kimberly is going to do the first part of the session on drafting of disclosure requirements. This work has been undertaken as part of the Principles of Disclosure project, which is really the cornerstone of the whole disclosure initiative. And eventually, the feedback that we get from that will inform and guide the ISB and staff when developing disclosure requirements for any new standards in the future. And after Kimberly's finished, we'll be passed to Andy Wood, who is going to talk about the role of technology in financial reporting. This is part of the Disclosure Initiative's digital reporting activities. And the idea of this work is to ensure that developments in technology and the way in which information is accessed and consumed is considered when developing presentation and disclosure requirements. So with that, I shall pass to Kimberly.
Everybody, let's work out the right button to push on this. Okay, so this session I'm going to spend a short amount of time sort of introducing and explaining the work that we're doing, but we are in particular looking for your feedback, so very much we'll encourage any comments or questions at the end of this brief presentation on the proposals that we've got there that are in your papers. So, in terms of the question is, well, why are we undertaking this work? It's part of the disclosure initiative project that the ISB has. The drafting of disclosure requirements today in existing standards has come up as a contributing factor to the concerns that people have, whether you call that disclosure overload or disclosure ineffectiveness. There are concerns that the way that requirements are drafted contributes to the problem. And that's in two ways, really. One is the lack of clear objectives, particularly in older standards. about what the purpose of disclosure requirements are, and that can make it difficult for preparers and auditors when they're making assessments around whether a particular disclosure is material or not, or if it is material, making judgments around what kinds of information and how much detail should they provide in order to meet that requirement, because it can be unclear as to what the objective of the disclosure is. The other issue that's came up is the highly prescriptive wording that's in a lot of standards. Words like the entity shall disclose, particularly when accompanied with at a minimum, followed by a very long laundry list of requirements, that can lead people down a path of what we call a compliance or a checklist approach, where they just work their way through those requirements and provide the disclosures without even thinking about materiality. Despite the requirement in IAS 1, it does say that you need not provide information if it's not material. People can look at the wording and say, well, it tells me I shall disclose as a minimum, so doesn't that mean I have to do it, notwithstanding that requirement in IAS 1? So those are the two factors that led to us thinking about, well, how could you draft disclosure requirements to deal with those problems? So we've been working with the ISB staff and coming up with the proposals. And as Hugh mentioned, the objective is to have the proposals in the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper, a particular chapter in that discussion paper. And then once the feedback comes in from you and other constituents around the proposed approach, the idea is that will eventually lead to a drafting guide that the ISB staff and board can use when drafting disclosure requirements. Now, one thing I should say is that we're focusing on the drafting as opposed to the content of disclosure requirements. There's another piece of the Principles and Disclosure Project that's looking at the role and purpose of the notes to the financial statements, and the board is looking at a couple of different approaches around what information should be required to be disclosed. So that's sort of dealing with the content side of things. Now, obviously, in order to illustrate how our proposed drafting approach might look, we have to give you some illustrative examples so you can get a feel for how it might look. And in putting together that illustrative example, we had to obviously think about, well, what things should we put in the illustration? So, for example, what particular requirements should we have listed there? And that's why we've had, I guess, had to cross over to some extent into content. But nevertheless, the focus of what we're trying to achieve is looking at drafting. So in terms of the work that we've undertaken, obviously we didn't start from scratch. There is the conceptual framework project to consider, and that's got some guidance in there in the ED that I'll mention shortly, and what's happened to date in the ISB disclosure project. We focused on two existing standards, IAS 16 and IFRS 3. And the reason for picking those as examples to work with is, first of all, IAS 16 is an old standard, IFRS 3 is a new standard, so quite different approach to disclosure requirements than the existing standards. And also, IAS 16, of course, it's dealing with assets, whereas IFRS 3 is dealing with a transaction, a business combination, a transaction that's happened during the period. So the nature of what those two standards are dealing with is quite different as well. And we thought that was useful, that would give us a couple of quite different standards in order to work with, so that hopefully what we came up with would actually be workable across a range of different types of standards and a range of different types of transactions. So that then led us to drafting redrafting the disclosure sections. Now, in terms of the main features of the proposed approach, and I think there's three key main features. The first is an overall disclosure objective for each standard, and then more specific objectives for each group of disclosures. Now, first of all, that overall disclosure objective for each standard. It is based on the objective of financial reporting as per the conceptual framework, so it is still quite broad. It's probably a little bit more specific than what currently appears in the newer standards today. Around the uncertainty amounts and timing of cash flows. We've taken it down a little bit more specific around focusing on financial position, performance and cash flows, but nevertheless it is quite broad. And in the feedback from people today and looking at it, some people have said maybe we can look at making that overall objective for each standard more specific to the particular topic in the standard. So I think that's one thing to think about when you're looking at the proposals and giving your feedback on the discussion paper, is, do you share that view? Do you think we should be focusing on making the overall objective more specific to the standard? Or are you comfortable that at that level it is really pointing people back to the whole objective of financial reporting, and that's the way to go? So that's one thing to think about. And then with the more specific objectives, the idea is for each group of disclosures, there should be a specific disclosure objective that ties those that group together. So when you look at what's underneath that particular objective, you can see what are the things I need to think about in order to meet that particular objective. There is greater emphasis on the exercise of judgment to determine the appropriate mix and of disclosures and whether or not disclosures are required. That's to try to move people away from this compliance checklist approach, which tends to prevail today. And it particularly leads to people just filling out their checklist and not actually stepping back and thinking about, well, what is relevant? What do I need to provide in order to provide useful information to my users? So we want to move people away from that compliance or checklist approach into more of an approach where they are thinking about what's relevant and therefore applying their judgment. Really the way that judgment is applied in many other aspects of accounting around recognition and measurement and also provide that same level of judgment for disclosures. Two tiers of disclosure requirements, and this is really bringing in that element of judgment. And the reason why we're going down this path is to first of all have a set of disclosures that would be required subject only to materiality. So the idea of that is to provide a certain level of disclosure that's going to be consistent across entities for whom that item is material. And that's one of the things that you would have seen in the conceptual framework exposure draft, and it talked about disclosing when you're drafting disclosure requirements, you need to have a balance between consistency and therefore setting some requirements that everybody has to do subject only to materiality. And the other alternative of providing judgment for people to think about what's best to, in order to provide relevant information, what's best in my circumstances, how can I best tell my story? In order to do that, you need to provide some flexibility. So these two tiers of requirements are really looking at that and saying, on the one hand, we need consistency so there is comparability across entities, but on the other hand, we also do need to provide some flexibility so people can think about what is the best way of providing relevant information. So that's what these two tiers are designed to do. So the first tier, as I say, is summary information that gives you a broad picture of property, plant and equipment, if that's what we're talking about, or a broad picture of the business combinations that have occurred during the period. So it's quite high level and summarised. And then the idea is that additional information that people will exercise their judgment to think about what else do I need to do, what greater level of detail or what additional factors do I need to provide in order to meet those objectives. So that's an overall summary. I'm now really open to the floor to ask questions or provide, in particular, any comments, any initial reactions you've got, having a look at what we've got there. I should say it went to the board last week, and they have agreed to put it into the discussion paper subject to refinements, and obviously we're particularly interested in hearing any thoughts that you might have that will help us through that process.
Darrell.
Kimberly, with regard to the second tier, the items to be considered for disclosure, do you have any concerns that either preparers will simply not want to go through the judgment process and just default and say, well, I'll just go ahead and disclose all those things too, or that auditors will sort of force people to make a stricter judgment in that area anyway, and they'll end up disclosing it so that you won't really, you know, get the judgment that you're looking for?
I think you're right. That is definitely a risk, particularly if we're trying to change the mindset away from that compliance approach to an approach where people are thinking about how best to communicate. There is a risk that people who will not want to do that for one reason or another, it could be they don't want to do it because they're concerned about being second-guessed or because they think this is going to take a lot of time. I would rather just fill out my checklist because I don't have to bother thinking about it. So there is that risk, and that's why we're trying to emphasise and put in wording to say that must consider. So we're trying to convey that you do have to think about this, and this is something that particularly came out when an earlier version of this was discussed in Tokyo at the Asia-Oceania Standards Setters meeting, that we want to make it very clear to people that they do have to consider, they do have to go through this judgment process. And people have to do that for other things, obviously, for recognition and measurement, and they make some very big judgments around, do I control something or not, which has a massive impact on your financial statements. But I think because people have now got in this habit of compliance with disclosures, because at the moment there are judgments, for example, in IAS1 around, is there anything else you need to provide in addition to having done all your mandatory requirements, and that is actually quite difficult to enforce in practice because people have got into this compliance mindset and said, well, I've done all my checklist, how could you possibly ask me to do anything else? If it's not explicitly stated, I'm not going to do that. And so that's where we are trying, and it will be a re-education focus in order to, just like judgments around materiality, that's another piece of the project that's already been done around IS1 to emphasise that people ought to be thinking about materiality. It does require a change in mindset, and it does require everybody to be on board, which I think is also another part that's been discussed in the project around auditors being on board with that and not reverting to compliance regulators as well, because people are concerned about the regulator second-guessing them as well. And obviously your regulatory environment will probably also have an impact on, do I go down the compliance mindset or do I have this approach where I'm thinking about what's best to meet those objectives, and the attitude of your regulator will also influence as well. So I think it's an issue you raise is actually an issue for the project as a whole, but obviously if we are trying to move away from a compliance approach, we do need to, I think, try and move that on to judgment.
Can I suggest we take another question because there are two presenters? Oh, only one, but still.
Christy said to answer difficult questions.
So I try to control the time. And I know there is another one, but may I suggest that we take one question first and then maybe next round. Please, Ng.
Thank you. Actually, two observations, really. One was in terms of looking at presentation through the IPSASB conceptual framework. I think we had a lot of the same sort of discussions. We probably weren't as crisp in where we actually landed, but I think, you know, certainly the approach of that required and then consider is a good way of approaching it. Practically speaking, and this is the other observation, we have IFRS-based reporting in the UK public sector, and we've just gone through a review process, both in central and local government, looking at exactly this area. And one of the key things that came out was that people were really not actually thinking about what they needed to put in their financial statements. And so the main finding was actually that CFOs really needed to get involved in the process at an early stage and get the red pen out. That was what we talked about, getting the red pen out, so that they were really thinking what's important in terms of presentation. And I think we kind of thought that probably, you know, it did require the partnership approach that you were talking about, because in a sense, actually, you know, kind of with the best intentions, almost like audit managers might tend to go down that kind of, you know, checklist approach. And, you know, therefore, at a, you know, chief accountant level, whatever, it's just easier to put it in. But actually, if you had that more senior input earlier in the process, that was the key to it. So that's what we've been pushing, because we had the situation where, you know, you can compare types of local authorities, and we had at one end of the extreme people taking 200 pages and at the other end 70 for the same type of organisation. So something was going wrong, and it was that pressure to really think about what you put in and how you said it.
Thank you.
As a team member, suggest give Kimberly more minutes so we can take more questions. The gentleman from Nigeria.
Thank you, Chair. For countries that have adopted IFRS, when it comes to these disclosure issues, I do understand that you are worried about information overload, which a number of jurisdictions have complained about. But you see, if IASB do not arrange things by priority for us, they were automatically arranged themselves by importance. See, in our jurisdiction, for instance, we say IFRS is minimum requirement. So we now have what we call other national disclosures. Those disclosure requirements that we want and we believe that other regulators are looking for, that they have written to us, that we put them under other national disclosures. You complete your IFRS report, your financial statement, and then you have another section of the financial statement that deal with those things we want to see. I don't know whether you want to look at that model as well, because there are instances where you will think that we need to take this off, we need to take that off. Entities will probably just come up with check the box and then just tick all those things that you want, and they said that's it. Principle-based require that they ordinarily should disclose, okay, what they think is material, what they think is relevant, and faithfully present what they do in their entity. But a number of organizations see the IFRS financial statement too voluminous, and they are able to pass the test of the taking the bus, and they stop there. Meanwhile, you may be looking for other things that will enable you to analyze the financial statement to be able to get the relevant information you want, and you may not find there. So I don't know whether you'll be considering that option of probably other national disclosures so as to give jurisdictions opportunity to be able to have variety of what they want to see in financial statement.
So if I understand the question, you're saying that would we allow for, you know, national standard setters to supplement with additional disclosures that you see as relevant? I guess that's something that every jurisdiction can do. In fact, also in New Zealand, we have some additional disclosures as well on top of IFRS. So I don't think this would prevent that occurring if that was what the jurisdiction decided to do. I think one of the things you'd have to think about if you were layering on some national requirements is how are they going to be worded? Is it going to be consistent with this approach? I think that's something that you would have to have a think about in terms of, would you be extending, for example, the summary? Would you be extending the additional disclosures? It would be a matter of thinking about how that would then tie in with and it may be that... That may be more difficult to do compared to what the current approach, where it's probably quite easy to add things on. But I guess it's something that we have to think about.
We can take more questions. Please.
I wonder whether did you do any cost and benefit analysis, especially if you are planning to put the objective to the ARIS standard that we are dealing with right now, because in emerging countries, people do not like to use their judgments much. Most probably, it's about their customary behavior, or they do not have enough expertise to make judgments, so they would like following guidelines. And also they get used to the for example, for the property and for IS 16, that they get used to the what is in there, in the standards, so everything will change as a disclosure perspective, so they will need more time and energy to do that. At least right now, we have much more comparable statements in our country. So I think that whether did you do any cost-benefit analysis for your approach?
Yeah, I think whether or not it necessarily is more costly depends on how you go about it. Obviously, at the time when it's implementing, there's always transition costs when you implement new standards, so people would have to rethink their financial statements as a consequence of that. But I think for most people, once they've gone through that process the first time and thought about what is their business and the users of their accounts and what's going to be relevant for them, and have gone through that initial process, at that stage, each year would be a matter of thinking about, well, what's changed? Have I gone into some new line of business? Have I had a significant transaction? Has particular things increased or decreased, which might mean that you need to make some revisions in terms of the types of information you need to disclose. But a lot of that thought process needs to go on anyway, particularly for listed companies that have got continuous disclosure requirements that are having to continue to provide information to the market, and will also be providing that through, whether it's your stock exchange announcements or it's your investor briefings. In fact, there's a lot of information that goes into those other packages that doesn't always make its way into financial statements. And one of the things that we've heard from companies that have already gone through a process, notwithstanding this approach, but just using the tools that already exist in IS1 to think about what's material and what's not, how do I best meet a disclosure requirement, and they've revamped their financial statements. So they've gone through this process of revamping their financial statements, taking things out and changing what they're doing. Some of them actually found it's going to reduce their costs on an ongoing basis, because at the moment they've got a financial statement production process and they've got an investor communication process which are done by different people, and sometimes the same things are going on. And what they've found is that they can now bring those two streams of work together and actually have the same people involved in who are doing all the other types of communications now doing the financial statement disclosures. So it's actually they're seeing there are actually some cost reductions as a consequence. And I think the other thing is on the benefit side of it also that people are seeing positive feedback from their stakeholders. And obviously this is the whole point of what we're trying to achieve, is to actually get better information for users. And so if people do see that, but yeah, you're right, there's always a cost-benefit trade-off, but I think there are some positive stories around that.
Clement.
Thank you. Obviously, you have comparability in mind when you talk about, you know, the tier one, the basic information. And then I heard you talked about materiality as well, as far as the two-tier disclosures is being considered. I guess my suggestion to the team would be I would urge you to think about more deeply on the conceptual justification on what is going to be included in Tier 1 and what is going to be included in Tier 2. I think with the materiality only as a gauging on allocating items to basic or additional information is inadequate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's already some people have given some feedback around. We've said tier one is summary, and then the rest is additional. Some have questioned, is that the right cut? Are there some other things that we might want to put up in that first? And then we need to think about what the basis for that is. I think, yeah, that's something definitely to think about.
Steve.
Thank you. I think it seems to me to be a good first step. We haven't seen all the other bits, but I was wondering, you know, how you deal with the risk about the second tier, the, you know, shall consider disclosures, because it could be, you know, a sleeping pillow for the board. So I'll just put it in the shall disclosure bit, or shall consider disclosure, because then they consider we just add on and add on. And I think I would say it's important that bit is, you know, it got shorter as well compared to what it is today. So how do you expect that risk to be dealt with in practice?
I guess that's similar to Daryl's question as well, that people might just ignore the shall consider and look at everything underneath it and turn it into a checklist. Is that the concern you have?
I'm more concerned about the board. You know, that, oh, because it's the second tier, then right. We just add on. How right. do you deal with that?
They'll put a whole lot of things in there because it's a shall consider. I think that's a good point, because we certainly don't want to get to that point where you put a whole pile of things in there assuming that people will filter out the things that are irrelevant if there's a risk that people aren't necessarily doing that. So it does certainly still require some discipline, and I think in particular the objectives will help with that, because the idea is that anything in that list has to be linked back to the objective of that particular group of disclosures. So you can't sort of put in a whole lot of nice-to-have type things that actually, when you ask the question, and we did that actually when we were drafting some of it, we were looking at existing requirements, and if you did a compare and contrast, you'll find that there are some things that we haven't got that are in the existing standards, particularly in IFRS 3, because we were looking at the objectives and making a call about, well, is that actually necessary to meet the objective? In some cases, we left some things out. But I think you're right that that will be something to bear in mind, that we shouldn't, as a standard setter, fall into that trap of putting a whole lot of things in there just because we're expecting people to filter them out.
I think, you know, this area is different from general measurement recognition principle. That is another aspect we have to take into consideration, that is regulators', you know, actions, views. And I noticed ESMA recently published a lot of the findings and the suggestions. And similarly, you know, I view SEC quite often, you know, do so. And in China, I was former chief accountant. Every year, before annual report, we announce something. And after annual report, we have summarized the findings and indicate some areas in a particular jurisdiction you should pay attention to. So there are some, you know, this aspect will play roles, as I understand. Any other question? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, moving on to a slightly different topic now. My name's Andy Wood. I work on the IFRS taxonomy team, but I'm going to be talking in a more general sense about the role of technology in financial reporting. Now, this ties in with the review of structure and effectiveness that's out for public consultation at the moment. One of the main areas mentioned in the review is ensuring the relevance of IFRS. And within that section, it talks about considering the evolving financial and wider corporate reporting landscape, as well as potential implications of technological developments for financial reporting. Now, this is one of the topics that was discussed yesterday during the breakout groups, which were also looking at the agenda consultation. So I want to focus particularly on these set of questions on technology that are from the review of structure and effectiveness. So there are three questions in that review. There's one on the IFRS taxonomy and the strategy, which was discussed in a group yesterday, and a sort of secondary question talking about supporting digital access. But in particular, there is the question that was discussed by Group D, which was, do you have any views or comments on whether there are any other steps the ISB should take to ensure that it factors into its thinking changes in technology in ways in which it can maintain the relevance of IFRS? So there are a number of areas were discussed in the feedback from the group yesterday. I have some thoughts on the impact of technology as well, so I'm going to run through this and also try and bring in some of the points that I heard discussed yesterday. Technology itself can have an impact on how information in the financial statements is used and consumed, and I think I've heard very much yesterday this was one of the main areas that people discussed. It can change how preparers gather information for their financial statements, but also what format they put those financial statements out in. So, for example, one thing that preparers might now be able to take advantage of is the ability to check stock market prices and other information for measurements online rather than having to wait for things to be published in newspapers or pushed out the next day. The format that things can be published in may vary. For example, some jurisdictions now require digital reporting with tagged statements to allow access to the data in financial statements. But we also have new ways of looking at the PDFs that people publish and new ways of looking at other formats that people might put out. So, for example, some are now publishing smaller sets of figures for viewing on phones and mobile devices so that people can pick up vital figures on the move. We also have the ability for users to search through and process larger and complex and with some of the newer technologies, increasingly unstructured data sets, which are allowing users to take a look at some of the text disclosures. They're allowing users to take financial statements that even haven't been formatted for electronic reporting and pull information out of those for them to work with in a more data-oriented fashion. Now, yesterday, some of the things that we also heard discussed were mainly in this area of what it is that users can now do with the information in financial statements. Some of it assuming that we have things tagged or marked up for some kind of electronic filing system, but others also just based on the ability to now process text in a more sophisticated manner. So ideas we had mentioned included the ability for users to take financial reports and potentially rearrange them and rearrange the aggregations and the figures so that they can take the metrics and the figures they want out of those reports and present them in orders that are more familiar to them and familiar to their environment. At the moment, some users do this, of course, if by data aggregators. They standardize the data, they push it back out in a standardized format for their users. But if a user has access to electronic reporting and tag statements, they can do this themselves. And that gives them a greater level of customization. Another comment that was related to that was this idea that if users want to create their own aggregations, then they actually require more of the detail in a financial report. They require the breakdown figures and the disaggregated figures, because otherwise they can't customize into the aggregations that are of most use to them. One of the ideas that was talked about yesterday, again, was more of an impact on the standard setting side, which is an idea that at the moment the standards are published in books around the world. They're often published in paper. They may be accessible in PDF. We now have the EIFRS, which is an online version of the text. But there may be other ways that this information could be published. There may be other ways it can be communicated from standard setters to preparers, from standard setters to software firms and on to preparers, that give people a lot more flexibility to pick up the pieces of standard that they're interested in, to identify the changes that they find, and to try and work with and update things a little bit more smoothly and maybe reduce the burden on some of the smaller enterprises. A lot of these possible impacts of technology, some of them can be seen now. We're talking about this because big data is a thing that is happening now and unstructured data analysis is happening now. But many of them depend a lot on potential changes in behavior by preparers and by different investor users. For example, a preparer may already make a great deal of use of technology in their general ledger systems and have multiple general ledger systems, but they may not have the tools or the motivation to be able to pull that together and run it all the way through directly into their financial reporting. And some of these possible impacts of technology depend on whether or not it ever becomes smooth and efficient and easy for organizations to do that, and whether there is an advantage for them to do that. So one of the things that I wanted to consider, since we have such a good gathering of standard setters from around the world, is some of these impacts I've talked about, some of them happening now, some of them are a bit more theoretical. But the question is, what is the impact of technology on financial statement information in your jurisdictions? So this impact is being seen maybe on some things in London, it's very easy for me to say, but I don't have eyes all around the world. And the other question is, does this impact how you set standards? Is it impacting how you set standards at the moment? Do you think it is likely to impact how you set standards in the future? So one thing I just wanted to do as a quick show of hands on that second point is, who thinks that they are seeing an impact on standard setting at the moment? Does anybody think that that some technology is impacting standard setting? Anybody? Just a quick show of hands if anybody thinks that. That's interesting. Does anybody think it could impact standard setting? Oh, yes, that was the third question. Is anybody thinks it should impact standard setting? So I think that's quite interesting because one of the things in there, for example, the principles of disclosure and various other bits of the disclosure project and the drafting of the IFRS standards is the idea to try and write the standards in a neutral fashion so that disclosure requirements would suit any format that these statements are then published in. On the other question for how people are seeing standards financial reporting affected in technology around the world. Does anybody have any particularly good, any impact they'd like to share or anything that they see in their jurisdiction, or whether they don't see any impact of technology at all?
Our financial reporting lab, you may be aware, have got a project on technology. So they've issued one report on, which is called a digital reporting present, with the implication there will be a digital reporting future to come. But I thought the really interesting thing with the present one was, yes, there are customizable financial statements available via the website. There are e-books, versions of financial statements. But it might be a bit saddening, but most of the investors we talked to said, just give us a PDF. That's actually what we want. Why do we want a PDF? Well, firstly, it's the notion of the boundary being clear, that they know they've got everything in one place And so if they want to search for information within the annual report, they know where it's, they know they can find it. Whereas a customizable financial statement is the fact, well, you know, if I cut out this bit of the governance review or this bit, I don't know whether the bit I'll subsequently be interested in will go. So that was one point. I think the other point that we've got to bear in mind, and it does come at the boundary, is how are investors really using an annual report? Yeah? What are they really using it for? And I think there is a big element of it where it's confirmatory value. It's not about actually, you know, it doesn't drive investment decisions in itself there and then. It confirms, provides assurance that all the information that has been more investment driving was appropriate. And that's where the audit comes in. And I don't think you can really consider new technologies without also thinking, what is the implication for the audit thereof? I think the two are absolutely intertwined. Now, it doesn't mean we can't break away from this, but at the moment, I think that's the limiting factor, is this notion of having a clear boundary and the audit opinion is clear, that this is what's been audited. I've got it in my hands, or at least, you know, on screen, but I know where it starts and stops. I know where the audit starts and stops, and it's to support that confirmatory value, and all of that came in. But I think there's still things we can learn about how information should be presented that allows that those. I think it's really understand what is it users actually want and how do they physically use the information, which could help understand how we reshape within a recognised boundary. The only other point I'd make is I'd also just be a little bit careful about confusing data with information. You know, yes, we can. There are ways of mining a whole load of data and piecing it together and giving your own analysis. But the benefit of an annual report is management speaking to investors in the round, and it's the information content that only comes from some form of kind of continuity of story there, which I think is something which can be lost when we feed the appetite of analysts who want to deconstruct and reanalyze and reconstruct. You know, we're feeding an appetite for data rather than an appetite for information and a story. So just.
Certainly be an interesting development for technology would be able to capture and pass the story through as part of the data so that wasn't lost.
Yeah.
Who want to respond?
Yeah. My intuition tells me quite strongly that we're kind of having trouble seeing what the future holds in when we think about technology. And I remember this good quote that actually Ian McIntosh mentioned about, it was a Henry Ford quote. And Henry Ford said, before the car was invented, if you asked the people what they want, they would have said faster horses. And I think, I mean, it would really surprise me if in 100 years' time we're dealing with paper PDF documents. I just can't, you know, it's, at some point things will change quite fundamentally. But we can't, I'm not sure we see which way it is.
Now, related to what Hugh just said, you know, I have a view which, again, opposed by all the other board members. That is, when we set standards, think about financial reporting, I think basically we're always on two bases. One is hard copy, PDF, one version of hard copy. Another one is annual basis. But nowadays, the information published, accumulated continuously in the company's database, stock exchanges, and other places. Therefore, whether it is necessary to repeat in the annual report everything, you know, I feel doubt. In China, the Chinese SEC allowed many years ago to cross-reference something you already published, not change, but still useful for reading this annual report. And if you clearly mark where you can find in the database. And I think unless we think disclosure this way, otherwise there's no chance to reduce information overburdened. This is my personal view, rejected by the other board members.
Please. My own view is that technology is only a medium of delivery. Technology cannot have an impact on accounting standards because standard setting is something different. Like you are delivering it on newspapers, you are delivering using technology. I'm not sure how that's going to have impact on standard setting. Maybe spreading it across would be faster, comments could be faster, but how can the change? Medium cannot change the standard setting. The second is, on the big data, what you're saying on big data and the unstructured data, the whole idea of people getting at structured data is what is the standard. Now you start getting into an unstructured data and start emanating into your financial statement, it can add to a lot of problems and you won't be able to reach out to conclusion. So while big data is playing a great role in future and predictive model, this is not on prediction. This is on a statement of affairs on a day. That doesn't depend on the big data or the data analysis. This is why.
Tom.
A couple observations. The XBRL taxonomy in the United States is having an impact on how information is used in the jurisdiction. More users, not many, but more are directly going to the XBRL type reports to access information. But more importantly, the data aggregators are now finding that the errors are sufficiently down to begin exploring using the XBRL tagged information by entities as the way to obtain information to put into their template, which reduces the likelihood of a double coding error, or at least another coding error by the coders within the, in the process. And so they're significantly evaluating that more often. And on a limited basis, in our standard setting over time, we've found how we write presentation standards and or the alternatives we use for disclosure requirements are affected by XBRL, and that we at times have been sensitive to writing things differently so that it can be tagged more easily to be used. And that's something I would recommend you talk to your XBRL.
Kim.
Thanks. Just an observation around, well, you know, how does technology change financial reporting? Well, I think in terms of, let's say, recognition and measurement, I don't think so there, but I do think that it has an impact on the amount of information disclosed. So I am aware of some views which say, well, because technology makes it easy to access information, to process it, to filter it and all of that, one approach is, well, you just dump it all, which I think ties into a comment made as well, where it's all about data versus information. So it's to say, well, if you want to go and filter through all of it and find out all about whatever it is that you may find interesting, you can do it. But then that does take away, perhaps, if you want to call it, the information value of some of the data. And do people really, as users, do they really have the time or the inclination to go through all of that data? So I do think that one has to be careful that you end up by saying, well, because of technology, we're not going to focus on reducing disclosures, we're not going to focus on what really is material or anything like that. You just make everything available and leave it up to the user. Personally, I don't think that that is the way to go. I certainly think that you've really got to focus on what's important because, yes, while technology makes it easy to do things, people don't have the time or the inclination to actually do that. So that's just a comment I wanted to make. And the other thing is, picking up on XBRL, in my jurisdiction in South Africa, our regulators are now starting to look at possibly requiring XBRL. So it's interesting, it's the regulators that are doing it. I'm not quite sure which, let's say, users in terms of investors really want it, but the regulators are the ones. And again, it goes back to they don't particularly want to get the PDF versions because they've now got to go through another process of extracting that information into another format. I suppose the question would be, well, what are they going to do with all this information? Well, that's another question. But maybe they just want data. Maybe they don't really want, perhaps, let's say, useful information. They just want a whole bunch of data. So those are my comments.
Just to add a little bit, and just to come back to the observation that technology shouldn't be able to influence the accounting standards or financial reporting. I wonder about that, particularly in relation to the primary financial statements project that we're just about to ramp up. I think this is a bit of a slightly tentative view, but I think I can relatively easily see, or at least would be open to the notion that with better technology, the way you think about the structure of our primary financial statements could be different. And the idea that you could be tagging line items in different ways, you could perhaps give people choices about how they distill information out. I think we should explore it.
I was just going to pass along that in the U.S., we have actually had some investors tell us that they don't care whether the information in the financial statements is presented on the face of the statements or in the notes. And they encouraged us just to think of the financial statement package as a big, data warehouse. And this was in the context of us trying to decide whether certain things, should be presented on the face or in the notes. I guess you could take that comment to indicate that this idea of just a dump of information might be useful to them. And I suppose, from, say, the value of an audit, you could say, well, the procedures for recording transactions and getting them into this database that then could be accessed by investors, perhaps that would be of some value. But my own personal observation is I hesitate to say that there's widespread disregard for presentation amongst investors. I tend to think that investors place some value in the way that financial statements are put together and presented as a package of individual statements. Although we may eventually get to some sort of complete access to general ledgers, I don't see that as something that would happen in the very near future at all.
Steve.
Thank you. Well, I think in many respects, if you look at it, the standards as they are drafted today are drafted the same way as they were 50 years ago, even though I can't remember that far back. But basically, if you look at it, they're just paper written and they are requesting more information because that was the issue in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they should be standardized because then it was easy to read. Today, life is different. The users, readers, they have so much information. The question is to find and extract the relevant and material information. And in my country, you don't file any paper-based financial statements anymore. You must file them on PDF or XBRL. And if you mention XBRL, it's really quite an old technology type. It's like a Excel sheet where you put in particular areas. And it's a bit old-fashioned and it's only easy for the regulators to use. It's very difficult for users, ordinary people like me, to actually read anything that has been in XBRL. And I think this development, we'll see with the mobile, other technology movements, also the cloud and other things, I think that will affect reporting. It will affect the requirements and standards. And we will read differently. We will read on the screen. And the standards should be, and disclosure requirements, presentation requirements, should actually be adjusted to facilitate such a read. I think it was very fascinating when you said, how do we actually use the information already published? Can we update the information? Because you're on the internet all the time, you have the possibility to update and update the report. So why do you, I think you need an annual report, but the technology makes life different presentation to. I think the key is that it should be considered and one should be open, because otherwise it could very easily be disruptive change to a standard set or to financial reporting, because they may just in the cloud collect information of the most important bits. So I think the key is consider and be aware that this might change the whole world of presentation, and we should work carefully with that. Thank you.
your quote, Hugh, of Henry Ford's, that's actually one we're using all the time to justify the digital future, the next phase. So it was funny to hear it come back. But I think for me the issue is, and when you look at their history, you know, if you wanted to understand about what a company was doing, there was a time the annual report was the only thing. And then the accessibility of information, the timeliness of it, has grown exponentially. And I think the real issue is what space does that leave for the annual report? What role does it play within that broader communication framework? And that's where it might start creating impact for standards. So I think you could do an alternative to Kim and say, well, information is so easy to access, so let's put more of it in because we can capture it. Well, you could go in the other direction. You could say, well, if it's only to confirm, if it's the audit and the whole package that confirms that information which they're accessing directly, does that mean you could have less in the annual report? It could be at an aggregated level that shows, the profit is the profit we were talking, and you don't need the breakdown in the annual report. You know, it could go either way over the time. So I think it's important to see that this technology is happening, and it's a threat and it's an opportunity and it's an impact. What we need to know is really within the whole breadth of communication and channels that investors use, what place does the annual report play in that? And that is where you'll find the future of accounting standards in that instance. Now, then you might move on to a different type of accounting standard that looked at setting standards for real-time information and access to general ledger. How might that be facilitated? But that's, that's longer in the future. But at the moment, I think the information, what we really need to understand is, with the technology, how's the annual report used, and what's the implication of that for the annual report and standards?
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to respond?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just a follow-on observation from what Anthony's just said, I think I'm interested that nobody's actually mentioned integrated reporting in this debate, but it seems to me that that's an obvious question then when you think about those comments about extension and how do you use information, how do you select information, and what's the broader boundary. So I just think, that's going to need thinking about.
Okay, there are quite a few things in there that I am very interested to hear, in particular things that I've already started thinking about, and I think we'll already start to think about as we consider how the impact of technology works, includes this idea that at the moment the most common digital reporting formats lose the story. And there is this idea that at the moment if you take the data, you're not getting the story. So I suspect there's some work to do there, because I don't think it's necessary that technology and the more data-oriented consumptions have to lose the story when they get that information in. I think that's possibly more of a side effect of the current formats, and that there may well be ways that actually what happens when you get a digital financial report is you get the information in it that says, and this was part of this particular financial statement, which means it was a recognised figure, and this particular piece of information was highlighted by management, for example, to try and preserve that story in the data formats, which helps a bit with some of the concerns that I hear from people about context, and that context is still very important. And I'm definitely very interested to hear that in some areas, at least with digital reporting, that behaviour is starting to change, but also quite interested that most people think that it's not yet having an impact on standard setting. So we shall take all the information away. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. To conclude the meetings, I want to say a few words. Firstly, can I suggest all of you to express our sincere thanks to the speakers, the chairs, and they've done a wonderful job. I particularly noticed, after David, we find another one can make joke for us. And he's from Scotland, not support independence. And secondly, we have three great women behind the curtain, Michelle, Gloria, somewhere, and the Carol. And they've done a tremendous job to make sure everything is run
very well. I organized many meetings in China when I was chief accountant, and something happens quite often, oh no, really, but make the whole meeting disastrous. That is the sound system. May I suggest to express our sincere thanks to the gentleman behind the, in the corner. Gloria asked me to suggest you to fill the form carefully and well. We have two forms, the general evaluation forms, and Michelle said in a new version. And secondly, there is another form ask you whether you want printed copy of SME standards. We don't want to waste the money and the resources. So if you want, please fill. And we will have lunch, and after that, you know, the emphasis meeting will start from 1:30. And Patricia particularly asked me to suggest you to sit the front side of the room. And next year, the World Standard Setting meeting will be held, the September 26th and 27th. We hope you will come back again to meet together to share views. And finally, I wish you all safe journey back home. Thank you. Thank you very much.